Welcome to the show. Thank you for listening to Blue Hardwood, the place to be to talk Dallas Mavericks. If you enjoy the podcast, please remember to rate and review the show. Without further ado, here are two people who are all jacked up on Mountain Dew after the last 72 hours of NBA news and need a nap. Lauren Dunn and Brian Zillum.
How's it going, everybody? Billy, thank you so much again for the introduction, as always. Busy episode lined up today. We have a nice little round table, actually getting to know the newest Dallas Mavericks that joined the team over the weekend. And of course, by doing so, we had to reach out, you know, make a couple phone calls, and, you know, we had to, you know, bother him, money whip him a little bit, but we got him back on. David Rommel, host of the Locked On Heat podcast, joining us. David, what is up, my man?
Not much. Never a bother. Always happy to join you guys in the podcast. You guys do great work, and I am so glad that you reached out. And I wanted to volunteer, to be honest with you. I told you, look, because if you need more information on these guys, I'll be happy to do it. So,
well, we really appreciate your time. Thank you so much. I know you're so busy. I mean, you haven't even really had a chance to catch a breath since the finals ended. It's just like, here we go again.
Yeah. And I was just talking about that in another podcast. Like, everybody's wondering about what to do with content. And we were talking about the Delete Eight teams and, you know, oh, we haven't seen what those teams look like in almost a year. And it's like, what are you talking about? I couldn't even prepare for the draft. I was just covering the finals weeks before. It's been so difficult to keep up of everything. And I know that sounds like I'm kind of bragging. I'm not at all. It really has been difficult to keep track of everything. Like, how am I supposed to know who Precious Achiuwa is when, I mean, I was just watching LeBron James and Anthony Davis beat up on Miami. So it's kind of difficult to just stay abreast on everything that's happened.
No, I mean, when the Heat drafted him, I was like, damn it, that is a great pick for them. Because I'll be honest, there are some guys that I like, but even like, I mean, well, Tyrese Maxey to Philly is actually a pretty good pick for them with some bench scoring.
I thought that's who was on Miami's radar.
Really?
I really do think they needed somebody to defend the point of attack, which is why they signed Avery Bradley. But I think that the fact that he's represented by Rich Paul and Clutch probably damaged any chance. I don't think that was a relationship they wanted to re-engage with.
Yeah, but some picks I would just look at and be like, yeah, I just don't know how good of a – was that really what you wanted to do? I mean, like even Phoenix at 10 drafting Jalen Smith, I was like, okay, a little questionable, but okay. Maybe you see something that I don't see. But yeah, and then when Miami takes Precious, I mean, Precious was a guy that I thought, could be useful for Dallas. I even could see him going as high as 12 to Sacramento. But anyway, so for, I think for the value that Miami got for him and what he's going to bring to the table, I think it was a great pick.
Yeah, talk about keeping up with the free agent. No, that's like great info, Lauren. I'm glad that you're here because I don't know a lot about Precious other than his name is Precious and he played in Memphis, so there you go. But busy weekend, David. You know, you have a couple key components out of Miami. You know, Jay Crowder's now a member of Phoenix Suns, but seemed like the Heat did recover nicely with the additions of Mo Harkless and Avery Bradley. What are your initial thoughts there?
It's tough to give up on Crowder because we got the very best version of him, which is something I think Mavericks fans, I don't know if you saw the best version of him, actually. I think it probably didn't happen until he joined the Celtics a couple seasons later. But, you know, in Miami, he was great, an immediate fit that contributed so well. His shooting was historically good for his career. And he was a valuable player in the bubble. It allowed Miami to, you know, have another switchable defender out there. You could take Myers Leonard out of the starting lineup and put Jay in there, and it worked so well. So that loss is tough. And Derek Jones Jr., a young, promising player that's a great perimeter defender and a constant lob threat because of his vertical ability. But, you know, like you said, Miami did bounce back well. You get a guy like Harkless who has some potential, who can stretch the floor, and given Miami's track record, you could probably maximize what his skill set is. And as far as Bradley is concerned, you know what you're getting, but you're also getting that point of attack defense that was so lacking for Miami. You're not getting it out of Tyler Hero or Goran Dragic or Kendrick Nunn. So you need somebody to go in there as a guard and be able to defend the perimeter as well as Bradley does. And so he fits an immediate need. Works really well. I didn't expect a big swing for Miami. He had been linked to Danilo Gallinari. That didn't seem realistic given how much money Gallinari was expected to make around the league and is getting from the Atlanta Hawks. Mm-hmm. You know, his conversations about wanting to win, I took those with a huge grain of salt because he just hasn't gotten paid the way most NBA players want to get paid. And so that makes perfect sense for him to have a great year in Oklahoma City and then get a lot of money that Miami was not willing to throw at him.
Yeah.
Yeah, that $60 million contract getting paid $20 million a year. I think, I mean, good for him. Good for him. I mean,
yeah,
I
if he wanted to win so badly, wouldn't he have approved the trade from Oklahoma City last year? Like, what hung up that deal was the fact that Miami didn't extend him beyond this season, and he wanted an extra year. So Miami wasn't willing to sacrifice on their plan to capitalize on potentially Giannis Antetokounmpo. So, I mean, it's whatever. It's okay. Gallinari was a great fit, a great shooter, but good luck to him in Atlanta.
Are you getting vibes so far, David, based on the moves that Miami's done and the Lakers done? Do you feel like Act 2 already predicted for the NBA Finals?
No, I would not say that. Like, I think... I mean, look, I probably am being much more realistic than Heat fans want me to be, but I think they were so perfectly suited for the difficult conditions of the bubble that they really capitalized on that environment. And look, that's not to say they had a bad roster. Clearly, they had a great balanced team. But if things were different, if the factors that normally play into a traveling team and the playoffs and the environment that those young players would have to be a part of, I don't know that they get as deep a run as they were able to achieve last season. So I'm not penciling them in for a finals run. I think, look, a lot of teams in the East have improved. Brooklyn, Philadelphia, Toronto is probably the only team that got worse. Even Boston made some, you know, lateral moves that I think keeps them in the contention. So there, I mean, even Atlanta, they're probably going to make a playoff push for the first time in a year. So there's a lot of teams in the East. They're very, very good. And I can't say that Miami is significantly better than, I don't even know that Miami's better than any of them, given everything that we've seen from them over the last season. And so it's going to be difficult for them to be able to make another finals run. And, you know, it was a great magical run. Again, they're pinning all their hopes in 2021 on the promise of potentially getting out of Antetokounmpo. So they couldn't swing for the fences the way a lot of fans wanted them to.
Kind of an odd question for you. It's about KZ. I want to know, like, what are your expectations for him next season and his role?
What? You are the second person that is not affiliated with Heat Twitter to ask me about Okpala. And I'm just like, I'm starting to doubt myself here because I must be the only person that isn't on the Okpala train because everybody else thinks that he is the second coming of Kevin Durant.
Like, oh, gosh.
I know, I don't know. I mean, I know I'm probably exaggerating somewhat, but it's just, to me, it's so silly because, like, I know Miami gave up an extra second pick to acquire him. And when you make that kind of move for a team like Miami that has usually drafted pretty well, you go, oh, maybe there's some promise there. But then he spends the whole season not playing. He spends it in the Sioux Falls Skyforce, their G League affiliate. He doesn't do particularly well there. He doesn't play at all during the bubble where he's quote-unquote injured, but I don't think there was really an injury there. And so now all of a sudden everybody's thinking, oh, this is the next guy who's going to be, you know, you can plug him in at the four. You're going to get this incredible wing defense. He's got all this potential offensively. I haven't seen it, and I don't know that we're going to next year. So I'm probably a little atypically low on Okpala. I know everybody, if you talk to somebody else, another media member, you're probably going to hear them say, oh, he's the next big player. They're high on him. I believe the front office does have something invested in him and does like his potential. I just don't know that we're going to see that realized next season. So I'm, you know, whatever. He's a second round pick, so you didn't really lose all that much to acquire him. But I don't know. I'm starting to worry now if I'm the only person that just doesn't see anything. Because if you're starting to ask me about him, that's hilarious.
I mean, I asked because honestly, he's a huge question mark to me. Like, I have no idea what the expectation for him. I believe he was the 32nd overall pick.
Right.
Yeah. And so he's still only 21. And so I have no idea how Miami plans to use him. Obviously, Duncan Robinson, Kendrick Nunn, everyone knows about them. Kendrick Nunn being undrafted. Wait, was Duncan Robinson also undrafted?
Yes, he was. In fact,
he was.
Purposely okay. So from Miami, they hid their intentions to bring him in. In fact, I think him and the Heat and the Lakers were the only two teams to actually put him through any kind of workouts because, you know, he had such an unusual rise to prominence at Michigan, and he didn't really play all that much either. So, I mean, he was a very well kept secret for the Heat.
Interesting. Yeah, the Okpala thing. I don't know. He's just I. Like you said, I'm like, I don't know how much I've seen him play, but I keep seeing his name every now and then pop up and on either Twitter or online or anything. And so I wanted to ask you, cause I feel like who would know better than David Ramil what the deal is with Okpala and what his future holds, I guess.
Yeah. That's a big guess for me. So I wish I could give you some insight cause we just haven't seen anything other than a few games in Sioux Falls. And then, you know, we've heard rumblings from the coaching staff that he's putting in work and he's doing everything in the bubble. but he didn't play. So I don't know what to make of it.
The Heat did have Josh Richardson on the roster for 4 seasons. One of the newest acquisitions Dallas was able to make and actually acquire on draft night. Lauren and I were very sad to see Seth Curry go, but obviously for the grand scheme of things, based on what Josh Richardson does a little bit better than Seth, and then also opening that opportunity for cap space in the 2021 season, that he seems to fit the current timeline the Mavs are on. Now, specifically, I would say, you know, if you're looking at, you know, stats and everything, there's nothing really that pops out. Provided me and Lauren with a great article that you wrote about Josh a while back, and it was great, and we'll definitely have that in the bio so everybody can check out and read. What does Josh Richardson do well?
Well, I appreciate you saying that first and foremost. As far as what Josh does, it's really tough to say, because I don't know that he excels in everything, although he provides very high-level defense. He's a guy who can guard 1 through 3 and can occasionally switch onto a 4. I wouldn't rely on that too much. Quicker guards will probably get past him. But look, solid perimeter defense, he'll always try his hardest. He's a good catch-and-shoot player, so he can stretch the floor. And on occasion, he'll put it down. His dribble is not as polished as it should be, but he does have a decent mid-range game. He's tried to incorporate a floater. It's not a work of art by any means, so I wouldn't rely on him being a consistent scorer in the restricted area. But he's a guy who can, on occasion, you know, get you the bucket that you might need. But his role in Miami was so miscast, and I think it was also miscast in Philadelphia, that it's kind of hard to gauge what the next step for him, if there is one. And I think, actually, in Dallas, it'll probably be the best situation for him, because he's playing with two other star-level players that are going to be handling the ball more often than not. And so you're not going to be asking as much from Josh as you did in Philadelphia, and certainly not in Miami. His defense, I think, is his calling card, but he's also a solid passer. He's a good shooter, and a guy, again, who can put the ball down and get to the rim on occasion. So all those things being equal, he's a very solid player. The expectations that Heat fans had of him becoming a star were kind of coloring their perception of him. And so that was a little unfair, because he was forced to take on this much bigger role that he was ready for. But, you know, he's a good, solid player. One of my favorites, to be honest with you, not just in the locker room, but just watching him play and watching him overcome everything and being a second round pick and achieve everything he did. Like I've always liked Josh, and I'm glad he was able to find some success here in Miami. And I saw, unfortunately, how Heat fans treated him when he left. And, you know, they kind of call him a clutch, a choke artist, things of that sort. And that was kind of unfortunate, because I think he deserved more.
Not that we don't want to not acknowledge the season he had in Philadelphia, but I mean, let's call a spade, that entire team and roster was kind of a mess. And Josh was certainly not used in the best ways possible during that season. But something that I really took from your article that you proposed, he seems receptive to coaching. He takes ownership. Those are kind of character traits Carlisle loves. So he's already going to be on board, like, with Josh and what he does. Something I kind of looked at as far as where his stats were as far as like an offensive player. So, you know, this is Luka, and, you know, Luka is one of the greatest passers like right now in the NBA season, right? So Tim Hardaway Jr., for example, Luka actually assisted on 84 of his field goal attempts just this previous season, right? So throughout Josh's career within Miami, the most baskets that he obtained that were assisted from was 59. And that was actually 17-18, and that was Goran that actually helped contributed that. So I'm taking that sample size and saying, okay, if Tim Hardaway can do that with Luka, what can Josh do? And then it's not like we don't necessarily need Josh to create off the dribble or anything like that. We need Josh to really hit home on those corners. And then where he seemed like he was okay a little bit as far as offensive player, it was like, you know, it seemed like he wasn't an okay player in the corner. And that's what we really are looking for. And of course, that additional defense where we can pair him and Tim Hardaway Jr. I think, Lauren, feel free to correct me, I believe that's like the projected lineup that we're looking at right now. But, you know, if he's just doing his role, where I feel like in this type of situation, we're not going to ask the moon of him. He doesn't have to be a 20-10 guy. If he comes out and plays defense and scores 15 or 16 points a game, hits a couple clutch frees, I think that's completely reasonable. And hopefully, you know, that'll be something that he's open to.
I think those are all realistic goals and things that he is capable of. And so, you know, again, like, his career in Miami was so difficult. And I mentioned on the Heat podcast a lot, but it's just from Mavericks fans that might not be familiar with it. Like, he was drafted in the second round the same year that Justice Winslow was taken in the lottery. And so there were expectations.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. That's, you kind of forget about that, but Winslow was taken, 10th overall. And then you kind of have this 40th pick and you take Richardson and, you know, you kind of hit on him and he winds up putting all the work in that was required of him in Miami. And, you know, obviously it gets, I think, over-exaggerated somewhat, but Heat culture and the work and everything else that is identified with Miami so completely, he was willing to do it. And there's a great story that's told about Eric Spoelstra working with him and having Richardson hit, I want to say, like 90 out of 100 three-pointers in order for him to get out of the practice facility. Wow. And he keeps coming closer and closer, but he doesn't leave until he gets it done and he finally reaches that mark. And Spoelstra, you know, recognizes that this is the guy that you can build around or at least have as a contributor on your team. And he spent that rookie season in, you know, again, in Sioux Falls, but he winds up coming to the team and being a contributor in a deep playoff run. The following season, things kind of fall apart because then, you know, Chris Bosh is nursing his injury. He's off the team. Dwayne Wade goes to Chicago. That team goes 41-41, but of course they start off the season going 10-31 when you have players like Deion Waiters and Derek Williams and guys that, you know, were on one-year prove-it deals, and you don't know what Richardson's role is. It changes so completely. And then the following season, after a 41-41 record, then, you know, now the expectation is you're going to be able to build on that. You have Hassan Whiteside on this roster. You're paying him a ton of money. You hope that maybe, you know, you draft Bam Adebayo, and you're thinking, well, maybe we can make a playoff run, and the expectations for Josh change. The following year after that, there are even more expectations on Josh. Like, he's going to be the star of your team because you see all this potential from him. And that was not a role that he was suited for. And you know, one of the things I wrote about in the piece was that he provides great leadership, but it's mostly like the leadership by example in the sense that he's willing to do the work in. But I wouldn't count on him being a 20, 25 points per game player. Like, he's just not wired that way. His calling card has always been high-level defense, playmaking for others, and occasional scoring, because I just think that's where he fits more comfortably. I think the burden of those unrealistic expectations were too much for him to handle. And then Dwayne Wade leaves. He comes back, changes the dynamic of that team completely. He's linked to trades for Jimmy Butler when Butler was in Minnesota that year before he was traded to Philadelphia. So a lot changed over that last season of his in Miami, and it was just not a convenient one for him to be able to get the most out of it. And so in Dallas, again, a clear structure, a clear superstar in place, limited expectations. I think he'll fit those perfectly. And so he's just like, as soon as I heard about the trade, I'm like, wow, that's a great move for him, because, you know, you're not, again, it's an accountable. Like, one of the things he talked about in Philadelphia was their lack of accountability there. And you have the two stars and Simmons and Embiid bickering. And, you know, you don't know what's going on with that front office. The coaching staff is not particularly adept. Carlisle's not going anywhere. He's a great coach. Everybody knows this. You know what you're going to – you know what he's asking of you, because he'll tell you. And so to me, that's such a great fit for Josh. And he'll be able to, again, fill that role so well. And Mavericks fans are going to love him because he's always going to try. Like, you're going to identify with him so completely because he beats himself up so much and he challenges himself constantly and he tries so hard, and it's pushed him to a pretty solid career so far.
So far, I like everything I'm hearing. David, you touched on something that I kind of want to dive a little deeper into maybe. So you mentioned his leadership and what, how much he puts on himself. Him being 26 years old, do you think he is the type of guy that could provide to be a solid mentor for someone like Josh Green, a rookie that we just drafted, who seems to be this 3-and-D type prospect? Do you think Richardson has the personality to be a mentor and could provide to be that for Josh Green?
I think so. I think, mm-hmm. you know, he's not the most vocal, but okay. at the same time, he's very easy to get along with. Yeah, absolutely. So you're never going to question his work ethic. And now he's got so much more experience, you know, a couple seasons in Miami and then in Philadelphia, where he's seen a lot more and how life is on the other side of things. And I think now he can go to a Dallas situation and just say, you know what, I remember what it was like being in your position. And I think he will absolutely reach out and do everything he possibly can to mentor those younger guys. And he's got enough playoff experience now where he's seen a little bit of things. And I think it's just, you know, he does work so hard. And while he's not going to be that kind of really vocal leadership, you still gravitate towards him because he tries so hard, because you see the pressure he puts on himself. So I think it's a great relationship that I'm curious to see myself how it plays out.
David, just one more final question for you, just in relation to Josh. Let's say hypothetically, you know, right now he's got this year and then he's got a player option next year. If, you know, the Giannis dream doesn't work out for Miami, do you see a Josh maybe returning to Miami?
I don't think that's part of the plan, because unfortunately Miami has just put all their eggs in the 2021 basket. So it's either Giannis or Kawhi or Oladipo or somebody along those lines. Who knows? I mean, Miami and Pat Riley are always looking for that next whale to get. And I would love for Josh to come back here. And I think the Heat front office would love for him to come back here, because now with Jimmy on the roster, there's a much more clearly defined role for him. And he's just a guy who fits so well, embraces the work and everything that is required of him. And he does everything well, not great, but well. He tries hard and he plays high level defense and he shoots well. And so all those things being equal, he would be a great fit in Miami. Again, with the diminished role, it would be so much better for him to kind of just maximize his time, his minutes, and become a valuable contributor. So I think they'd love to bring him back. I don't know how realistic that is, but yes, if he's interested in a reunion, I'm sure the front office would love to engage in those talks.
Move forward to another former Heat player the Mavericks actually required this weekend. This was a 6'7 power forward / center, James Johnson. And for someone who looks 6'7, David, my God, this guy looks almost 6'10 just based on his size, because this is a big man. He's a very big man and very intimidating as well.
He is LeBron light in that sense. Like, he's built very well. He's athletic and mobile, and yeah, he is athletic and explosive, you know. Like, he can do a lot. He's a talented player, and it's just been hard for him to be able to find a place where he could realize that potential. And Miami was the best place for him. So I think it was a great relationship for a couple seasons there. And again, he was part of that 41-41 season. He was there in 2016-17 when he was looking to sign a one-year deal. It was a two-year deal in the sense that the second year was a team option or a player option. I can't remember now exactly. But he signed a two-year deal knowing that he had an opportunity in Miami to prove that he was still an NBA player, because he had already been traded around. And no, you know, he was with the Kings. He was with the Grizzlies. No one really wanted him. And so, oh, he was with the Raptors even before that too. I forgot about that. And it's just like, he had already bounced around. He was already to that point where he was being labeled a journeyman. And you have an opportunity to come to Miami, a team known for, you know, reclamation projects and getting the most out of their players. And he embraced the work here as much as anybody. He lost a ton of weight. I think he lost close to like 30 something pounds in Miami. Wow. Early on. And he just got into the best shape of his career, was a contributor and making plays, bringing up the offense, leading fast break opportunities, playing high level defense. A guy who was, you know, you could put on a Giannis individually on one-on-one matchups. You could put him on a LeBron or something else. And he held his own because of his strength and speed and agility. So those things were such a great plus for Miami to have on a team that, you know, lacked an identity somewhat. He was a great role player here.
I was talking to somebody the other day, and his name's Sean, and Miami is his team, and he mentioned to me, he goes, I don't think Dallas fans are realizing the gift that they just got in James Johnson, because he is so underrated, and what he can bring off of a bench is, it can just be a huge boost. And after watching some of the highlights and just film on his game, you can see how versatile his game is. And so I'll be really interested to see how he's used in our system. As far as his time with Miami before he was moved to Minnesota, what did his role look like? And do you think it could be something similar in Dallas's system?
That's tough to say, honestly, because I'm not sure how he projects to be. I guess he would be a bench player, right? And in Miami, yeah, he was all over the place. Like, again, right, there was so little structure during the 3 years that he was here because, you know, he was a starter, he was a bench player, he was kind of yanked around, and this past season, like, his minutes dwindled completely. But yeah, the versatility makes him such an intriguing prospect because, like, he can do so much so well. And it's just, it's a roller coaster with James. You never know what version of him you're going to get. And there's those moments where he shoots well from the perimeter and he's engaged on defense and he's making plays for others. And there's those games where he's whipping passes out of bounds. The shots aren't falling, and so he's not productive. It's like, kind of live die by that sword, and you hope for the very best version of him. He'll never be a consistently great player, but there are going to be flashes where you're going to go, wow, I am so glad he's on this team. And then there's going to be moments where, you know, you get the other side of it and you go, damn, I can't wait to move on from the James Johnson. Yeah, Heat fans are kind of burned by it, and I think they've soured on him because of what happened last year, very unfairly. And I don't like the way that they respond to Johnson and his name. I even mentioned it when I thought he was in Oklahoma City as part of this trade. I thought he was going to get bought out there. I said, hey, I'm open to a James Johnson reunion. I got a lot of flack for that, somewhat unfairly, because I think he is, I don't think he's well-liked here. And I think he's lumped in together with Dion Waiters as a malcontent or a guy that didn't fit in to the Heat culture this past season. But there was a lot going on behind the scenes that fans aren't aware of. And I don't think that James was ever a problem. He was well-liked in that locker room, and there was no problem with him from the players. From the coaching side, maybe not so much.
Yeah, and that was like my next question, David. So obviously there was, I guess you could say, speculation, you know, there was, you know, room problems or what have you. But before that that trade, wasn't Johnson injured as well? Didn't he have a sports hernia?
Yeah, that was the previous season. And then...
Oh, okay, right. Yeah. Sorry.
No, and it's fine. And that's kind of where the problems start, has a well-known... a zero tolerance for that kind of thing. And we saw it with Justice. We saw it with Dion too, all three players who were traded at the same time this past offseason, that, you know, they weren't coming back as quickly. And from Miami's perspective, they thought that they weren't putting in the work necessary to get there. And so they kind of soured on those players individually and collectively then, because they were just kind of seen as guys that weren't buying in. And with Jimmy Butler's addition, all of a sudden the time frame changes. You can't afford to be at 80%. You need to be 100% because we're making a deep run. We're making a playoff push. And so James kind of, you know, fell into that same category as a player who didn't push himself enough. He was a captain, you know, which is something that a lot of people forget. Along with Udonis Haslam, he was so symbolic of Heat culture that they made him a captain on this team because he was so willing to do the work and he had fit in so well. Pat Riley loved his addition here and loved how his versatility and everything else. And they awarded him with that contract because they thought he would produce. And then he got hurt. He didn't. And when he came back, he wasn't at 100% shape, and he was kind of a little overweight, not greatly, just not in the kind of Heat shape that they would have liked him to be. And so they soured on him. They thought he wasn't fully committed. James likes to engage in other activities off the court that might not be as well liked, especially from the Heat front office. And given all that, he was one of the only friends that Dion had on the team too. So they were kind of seen as the odd couple and not, you know, viewed very favorably by Eric Spoelstra and the coaching staff on occasion. And so he lost favor. He didn't play much early on in the season. He finally worked himself back into that great shape. And then because of injuries, he needed to play. Spoelstra put him back in the rotation, I want to say around December, late December. And he thrived, like you get to see from him, where he's shooting well and defending. And you go, damn, why didn't we give him some playing time before? And it was just so much going on behind the scenes, and he just wasn't able to get out of that doghouse. So unfairly or not, he was given an opportunity here. You could say he probably didn't make the most of that opportunity, but I would say that he didn't do anything so badly to warrant the negative publicity that he got during the course of this past season.
Well, on that note, let's go ahead and hype the James Johnson trade back up a little bit, David. So based on everything that we're hearing, he seems to be a guy that doesn't take any crap. He's a black belt.
Yeah.
And, you know, he's not afraid to get into somebody's face as the interactions between him and Serge Ibaka have floated around there. I think my favorite one is where he dunked on, I know which Morris he destroyed in a dunk a couple years ago. It gave me joy, though. I don't know if it was the Morris twin that we don't. Is it Marcus Morris, Lauren?
I hope so. I believe it was Marcus. I believe it was Marcus, but.
Yes, Marcus Morris. Was it Marcus Morris, David?
Perfect.
I can't recall which one, but I'm sure it was well-deserved. I'll just put it that way.
You got that right.
But yes, and that was something that we, you know, from a Mavs standpoint, David, we desperately needed in the playoffs because we didn't have that enforcer. I mean, everybody kind of needs a, you know, if you use the NHL term, everybody needs one goon, a guy that's a shit stirrer, if you will, that's not afraid to get in there and get a little dirty, like the defend your top guy. So in that aspect, I'm completely for that. And he seems to have a pretty, at least a unique set of skills that Carlisle loves to utilize. And then with the, you know, QB1 that the Mavs do have in Luka, I feel like they'll put him in the right position. And Lauren, I could be completely off base here, but I would not be shocked if James Johnson might be in the starting lineup.
Yeah, I don't think that's completely out of the question. I will say, and I think I've said to you that I assume, as of right now, my guess the starting lineup would be Luka, Josh Richardson, Tim, Dorian Finney-Smith, and Maxi Kleber, while Porzingis is out for a little bit. But I definitely think there's a world in which, yeah, I don't know, maybe some slim odds there, because Dorian has just, he's done so well with Luka as a catch and shoot guy, obviously bringing defense as well. So we'll just have to see. But if they want to bring Dorian off the bench to kind of have some more defense with Brunson and Trey Burke, Tyrell Terry, maybe Josh Green off the bench, maybe that's where you insert James Johnson to just have more of a, I don't know, I guess a scorer. But if I had to put money on it, I would assume that he comes off the bench. And I think he'll be a nice little boost. I think he's the type of guy, or based off of what I'm hearing from David too, even though he's a little consistent, I think it'll be a nice boost to have here and there. And if he's playing and throwing passes 10 feet above guys' heads and just looks, whether he's not focused or whatever, if it's an off night for him, then I think we've got other options.
Is there any possibility of him being like, you know, like the kind of Luka light that you bring off the bench? I mean, because that guy, like, I could see that from James. Like, he's a guy who certainly wants the ball in his hands. He'll bring it up court, initiate offense that way. And if that's the case, like, I mean, he could be like your kind of sort of typical point forward. And while that might not be consistent, he's not a guy who you want off ball. He needs the ball in his hands to initiate, because he is such a good passer and he does have a great first step on occasion. And if that's the case, like, you want him to be a ball handler, you want him to be an initiator on offense. So that might be a great role. I know you've got Brunson as your backup. I think James certainly provides another competent ball handler from the wing position. So that's a great asset to have.
So James Johnson could be Antoine Walker is what I'm hearing, David, former Heat and Maverick great.
Yeah, that's exactly right. I mean, I think James is actually a little bit better as a three-point shooter, and he would not try to shoot four. But I'm sure that I'm sure he has a role in Dallas there. I've always liked his versatility, and you know, it was a nice feature to have in Miami. And defensively, he does have that capacity to guard 1 through 5. Like, you'll see that on occasion, and that is another great asset to have.
We'll finish off on this, David, and we'll get you out of here. If you had to put money on it on you know, the Giannis meter right now for Miami, well, what's your gauge? Obviously, you know, if Giannis signs, you know, the extension. It, this is silly conversation at this point, but you know, let's say right now at Dallas, Miami, and insert other, even maybe like the Clippers, God forbid, if something happens there. But is what's your meter at? Do you feel pretty confident? I mean, Lauren's trying to hype me up a little bit. I just, you know, I've gotten burnt too many times on keeping the powder dry for free agency. How are you feeling?
I've heard things about that interest from Giannis here. I know a lot of people have hyped up the fact that he shares an agent with Nam Adebayo, and of course Bam's not signing his extension just yet. I don't know if that's going to change over the next day or two, but so far he has not agreed to sign the extension, and I think that'll just kind of build more hype about the possibility of Giannis coming to this team, because if Bam does not sign that extension, then it seems like he's going to wait until next season after they acquire a superstar. And what better superstar to acquire than one who shares an agent with you? So, you know, and there's also some rumblings from other circles that Giannis does like what Miami's able to do, that given the limitations in Milwaukee of building a competent roster of Mike Budenholzer and everything else, that he does want to leave Milwaukee. So I'd say Milwaukee, it might be a three-dog race at this point, where, you know, there's Milwaukee has a chance because that's the team that drafted him. Miami's also in it. And I'd say that Dallas probably has a pretty good chance as well. I don't think Toronto has the same chances that they did, although, you know, a lot of Raptors fans think they have a pretty good shot. Like, I'd say right now, Miami might have a slight edge over the other teams, but that could all change very quickly.
I just don't want to get to this point where everybody's going to, I don't have Snapchat, David. I don't want to have to download Snapchat to see what Giannis is doing the next year. Just can't do it.
I mean, he's already got an apartment here. I know a lot of people have been talking about that too.
Oh, God.
I mean, you know, I think a lot of NBA players train in the offseason here. But, I mean, there was he was supposed to work out with Bam last offseason, and that did not work out. And, of course, that just gets Heat fans salivating from that perspective because it's like, oh, you're already, you know, you're training together. You might as well just be gearing up to play alongside each other. But I think it's just a matter of them sharing an agent. And then Bam had to go join Team USA for a brief time there, and it didn't wind up panning out. But even during All-Star Week in Chicago this past year, they were, you know, they were doing – publicity events together and things of that sort, and you know that agency connection is a strong one. So I don't know, it's overstated perhaps to some degree, but I think it plays a factor there. And I think from that agent perspective, like, they drafted their client and Bam, they helped him get to this point where he could achieve all-star status in just his third season. They want to build around him. He is the centerpiece of this team moving forward, even more so than Jimmy. And if that's the case, that probably is something that you take very favorably as an agent. And I would not think that he would have any problems selling Heat culture and the team and the front office structure and the stability in Miami that you don't get many other places. Maybe Dallas being one of the few places where you might find something similar, but you know, Eric Spoelstra being the head coach of this team for the past 12 seasons, Pat Riley being here for 25 years, all these things play into it. He has not had that in Milwaukee. And so I'm sure there are a lot of factors there that might be somewhat appealing for Antetokounmpo.
Yeah. And one thing I feel like it's underrated, David, that I think hopefully the Heat fans really appreciate. Once you have that meeting with Pat Riley, that it's like done, because I'm trying to recall meetings Pat has had with people, free agents that haven't closed a deal and they don't end up signing with Miami or
I've got three, actually. I got three.
Go for it.
Gordon Hayward a couple of years ago chose Boston. Everybody forgets that it was down to Utah, Miami, or Boston, and he chose the Celtics. Kevin Durant the year before that. But ironically enough, Durant wound up saying that something that Riley told him, and this is the honesty with which Riley speaks to these free agents, is that he tells you what you want. And if your goal is to win, we can offer that for you. And when he had that meeting with Durant, he said, look, we can offer you a great chance of winning, and we will put you as being the best player in the world the way we did for LeBron from 2010 to 2014. But if you want championships, then maybe it's better for you to look elsewhere. And that's why eventually he wound up signing with Golden State, because he wanted those rings in order to cement his legacy as an all-time great. So it wound up backfiring somewhat on Riley. And even before that, did the same thing with LaMarcus Aldridge. LaMarcus was very, very close to signing with Miami, and then wound up saying, you know, I'm down to Phoenix or San Antonio. And he wound up choosing the Spurs. So it hasn't always worked out for Riley. I think he has great charisma. He knows how to connect with players. One of the things I'll recall from Sean Marks' hire as the general manager in Brooklyn in an interview he did with Zach Lowe was, you know, he was a player here in Miami. And one of the things that he said he always recalled from his experience dealing with Pat Riley was how personable he was, that he took the time to remember your kids or your wife or your activities or things that you were doing off the court. Like, if you had a family vacation planned, he would check in with you a couple of weeks later and say, oh, how did it go? Blankety blank, you know, wherever you weren't. And those kinds of things resonate with players. And of course, there's the appeal of him as a godfather type figure and a guy who has this big, larger than life personality. But I think it's all that is really just talk. Like, for all the Showtime era Lakers mystique that he's shrouded with, I mean, Pat Riley grew up in a small town in Schenectady, New York, and he's a blue collar guy all the way. And that is the reality of who he is. Like, there's that white collar prestige, but he's also very much an everyman. And he just winds up connecting with players very well.
Well, thank you so much for that information, David. And you know, it really means a lot for, you know, the fan base and Lauren and I, for you to make some time for us to, you know, talk just the NBA and Heat in general. If you know, this is your opportunity to plug and promote anything you're currently working on upcoming. I know we got the season around the corner, so please share.
I mean, nothing specific, just continuing my coverage of the league and the NBA and Miami in particular on the Locked On Heat podcast. But I also occasionally co-host the Locked On NBA weekly show too. So that is my chance to give my thoughts on the league in general. And of course, I still write on occasion for The Step Back and also for Forbes Sports. So you can follow me on Twitter at DRamil13 for all of my coverage of the league.
I'm sick of this conversation. conversation is over. I'm done talking to you. Hit my music. I'm out of here.